You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Get your questions in. We're going to be doing mailbag tomorrow, so drop us a voicemail or a text message. Whichever you prefer, we love to hear from you. So once again, 331-979-1369 to hit us up. Matt, welcome back. Not the greatest performance in the world from the Bulls last night, but I think I'm confident in saying that the Bulls are not the worst team at the playing at the United Center at this very moment in this city. But so we at least have that. You know, the Blackhawks on an 8-game losing streak and just fired one of the greatest coaches probably of all time in the NHL. So I would say the Bulls are in better standings with Chicago fans of recently.
Yeah, I mean, at least for right now. What's up, Jordan? I don't know if you've looked at the Bulls' upcoming stretch of games on the schedule, but there's a chance that they match that 8-game losing streak.
Yeah, that schedule, we'll get into that in a little bit. Schedule is not promising in November. You know, I was looking over that last night and I go, you know, there's probably only one game in here I can guarantee a win. And even then, it might be a tough task to guarantee that. And that's the Suns. But we'll get into that in a minute. Let's talk about last night's game. So the Bulls fall to a pretty close game and the Bulls hung around for a while in this one. But I felt like Dallas, every time the Bulls kind of made a run, Dallas came right back with their own. And Dallas kind of let the Bulls hang around. And their bench did most of the scoring last night. But for Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, both not great shooting nights last night. Zach LaVine especially struggled in the fourth quarter. You know, this is the first of maybe a couple occasions this season where we've seen him try to play hero ball, and it just wasn't working between him and Parker last night. That ultimately killed the Bulls, though. His quick shots, contested shots, shots that weren't very high efficiency, and it ended up kind of crushing the Bulls.
Yeah, well, and Jordan, you know, it's something that we talked about, I don't know, I want to say more than a week ago now, after LaVine had a first, you know, a string of really dominant offensive games, and you know, Bobby goes down, Chris Dunn goes down, Markkanen's on the shelf, and we were talking about how really, I mean, options 1, 2, and 3 for the Bulls on offense right now are Zach LaVine. And he's being asked to be a primary ball handler in addition to the, you know, the ISO slasher scorer that he had been coming into this season. At least now that Fred has put Archie Diacono in that starting point guard spot instead of Campaign, Fred feels more comfortable with Archie handling the ball some, and certainly, you know, his assist to turnover ratio has to do a lot with that. But all of the attention that Zach is now drawing from opponents and their defensive schemes, because they recognize that he is the Bulls' best first, second, and third option offensively, he's had tough nights where, you know, if his shot's not falling, he's getting double teamed, he's getting trapped in the corners, you know, soon after he crosses half court, if he's the one bringing the ball up, it's ugly. And you see nights like last night where he's trying to force things a little too much. He was 0 of 6 from downtown last night. He had 7 more turnovers. We've seen games like that recently from LaVine in this stretch. He played 41 minutes last night, and you can kind of just tell from Zach LaVine in his post-game locker room comments after these most recent games that the guy's already looking like this is starting to wear on him a little bit.
Yeah, you can see that. Between that and the ability not to have anybody else on this team that can consistently score, I can see why that would be frustrating for LaVine, because now you're not only not getting your shots up, but it's affecting the way that you're playing. You know, you're being asked to do a handful of different roles, coming back and trying to basically reshape your own game. At the same time, though, you've got to take on that weight of this entire team basically being on your back until Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and Bobby Portis return. And, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. has done a good job, but I think it's unfair to put any type of weight on a rookie, especially this early on in the season. So once Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, especially Lauri Markkanen, I think that's going to be the biggest key here, is once he comes back, he's going to alleviate a lot of the pressure that I think LaVine's getting right now. But yeah, man, RJ Diakono, Holiday, and Carter, all three in the starting lineup, they had 9, 14, and 7 points combined, all only taking 9 shots apiece. And then between Parker and LaVine, 14 for 40, that's 35%, and they went a combined 0 for 10 from three-pointer. And then if you throw Carter in there too, they went 0 for 13 from the three-point line. This is what shocks me the most about last night, Matt. Coming into last night, Dallas was the worst team at defending the three over the last 6 games. They were allowing opponents to shoot over 40%, 40.8% from three on 28 attempts. Last night, the Bulls shot 24%, 8 of 33 from the three-point line. That's something you should have clearly taken an advantage of last night. And Justin Holiday was really the only one knocking down threes last night.
Yeah, Holiday was 3 for 7. That's kind of, you know, as good as you would expect Holiday's contribution to be, being primarily a three-point shooter on this team. Although he did have that really nasty crossover and one. Did you see that play last night? I was like, where'd that come from Justin Holiday? That is not his game. But yeah, I mean, if the Bulls shoot a little bit better from behind the arc in this game, they might win. And there were a handful of three-pointers that I thought were ill-advised, but for the most part, the Bulls had some good looks. As you said, Dallas, not a great team protecting that perimeter, and the Bulls had their opportunities. They just missed them. And between that and another turnover, you know, plagued game, especially more turnovers in the fourth quarter. Like, the only reason the Bulls, I think, between their turnovers and their lack of three-point shooting, were able to hang around this game is that Dallas, to their part, had 18 turnovers themselves. And Luka Doncic had a pretty awful night offensively, just 3 of 12 from the floor. I mean, really, like, the two guys that killed the Bulls last night were Harrison Barnes and J.J. Barea off the bench.
It's unbelievable, man. Like, watching J.J. Barea just kind of cook up the Bulls last night was frustrating.
Barea always kills the Bulls. It cracks me up.
And then on top of that, too, man, Harrison Barnes, I know he missed the first, I think, 4 or 5 games of the season with an injury, but then he came back. He hasn't been great this season, and then all of a sudden we make him look like a world beater. 23 points last night on 7 of 16 shooting. He was 8 for 9 from the free throw line. He had 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and 4 huge steals. The Dallas Mavericks had 11 steals last night, same with the Bulls, and I think Zach LaVine, while turning the ball over 7 times last night, did force 4 steals, so it was nice to see. But that's another thing, too. When Zach LaVine's the main ball handler, he's going to have nights like this, and we've seen it where it's become now more of a problem than anything else. It's like, when he's handling the ball, he's turning the ball over way, 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 way too much. And I think I'm a little bit more concerned about that than his defensive effort. You know, people on Twitter want to go to his defensive efficiencies. I want to go to the him turning the ball over. You know, that's been the biggest problem. If I had to pick anything out of LaVine's game so far, it's his ability to handle the ball and keep it secure for the entire game. And, you know, 7 turnovers last night. He had 9 about a week ago. And, you know, averaging somewhere around 4 turnovers a game isn't great for your main ball handler.
No, I think we talked about this a few games ago, whichever game it was when he most recently had one of those potential game-winning moments where, it's Bulls ball in the waning seconds of this game, and whoopsie, like the ball slips out of his hand. He had another Butterfingers moment late in the fourth quarter of this game last night when the Bulls were still very much in it. And it was one of his 7 turnovers on the night. And you're saying to yourself, all right, like, where do we draw the line between this being a small sample size and this just being like a weird fluke thing that's happening versus, all right, now the sample size is getting a little bit bigger and Zach as primary ball handler and guy to go get you a bucket when you need one late in a close game, over and over and over again, we have seen Zach struggle with taking care of that basketball. And to me, it's starting to become a little alarming.
Yeah, and, you know, he's trying to take over the duty as being able to not only create his own shot, but figure it out late and have the ball in his hands. And I'm not necessarily saying going away from that. Like, would you rather have Archie Diakono be handling the ball or LaVine? I'd rather the ball be in LaVine's hands because I know he can score from basically anywhere, and he can create better than I think Archie Diakono can late in games. That being said, you're right, though. Think back to the Pistons game. Butterfingers in the last 3 seconds and didn't even get a shot off after Smith. You think about the Hornets game where he butterfingers that one, and the Bulls ended up winning that game, but he had another one of those close moments where it was an inbounds pass, and all of a sudden he loses it pretty quickly. I think there was another time against the Denver Nuggets, too, late in that game, and then we go to Dallas last night, and he did the same thing. The only thing that I will say in LaVine's defense is, like, once Chris Dunn comes back, I think the handling of the ball will be split time between him and LaVine. And, you know, we mentioned it before, and I don't know if this is going to change at all, but last year and even in the one game that we saw Chris Dunn play in, Zach LaVine was handling the ball and Chris Dunn was playing a little bit of an off ball guard position more so than I think we've ever seen before. So I'm curious if once Chris Dunn comes back, he's going to be handling the ball and Zach LaVine's going to have to play off, or if they're going to kind of switch it up. But I think Fred Hoiberg, especially late in games when you're only down 1 or 2 possessions, I think he might have to look at Chris Dunn once he comes back and delivering him the ball more so than LaVine.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, that's something else that we've talked about. It's not like you can play Chris Dunn off the ball all that much. You can
shoot.
Do it a few times down the floor if you want to let LaVine be the primary ball handler for a few possessions here or there. But Chris Dunn is not enough of a threat shooting from the perimeter to have him being a two-guard playing off the ball with LaVine being the primary ball handler. It just doesn't make sense. So, I mean, I think Fred's best option, if he does want to have LaVine and Dunn both handling, ball handling duties and letting LaVine really be the instigator and the creator for this offense at times, is when Chris Dunn is off the floor getting his rest, you stagger him and LaVine. I think that's Fred's best option right now once Dunn comes back.
I would tend to agree with that. And I want to get into more of last night's game. But I wanted to mention to our listeners, yesterday, I don't know if you took it upon yourself, but went and looked at the player props from last night. I know more and more as we get into the NBA season, a lot of people are asking about where you place your bets, what kind of advice we can give when you're betting on this Bulls team this year. And my advice for you is kind of stay away from it. But if you have to lay down some money, the only place to do that is at MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust my guys. They are your best bet this season. Matt, last night I had 4 player props. Zach LaVine, over 25.5 points. He hit that. Thank you. Very last seconds. I went 2 for 2 overall. Had DeAndre Jordan, points and rebounds. He missed 2 late free throws. I would have went 3-1 as opposed to 2-2. I went over on Luka Doncic's points last night as well. He didn't turn out to have a great shooting night. And then I went over on Justin Holiday's points. I know we were making the joke a couple weeks ago. I was like, you know, Justin Holiday has a heater at home like once every 2 weeks. So that's when you want to lay your bets on it. So we went 2-2 overall. So if you want to make those player prop bets, go to mybookie.ag, enter the promo code LOCKEDON to activate your offer. MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. First deposit 100% up to $1,000. So visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when you're creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie will match listeners' first deposit 100% up to $1,000. Do it right now. MyBookie.ag. Promo code LOCKEDON. Be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls. Our text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. So I'd mentioned it, Matt. You know, went 2-2 last night on some player props. I stayed away from the Bulls against the spread. It was only at +1.5. They actually opened as the favorite at -1, and then it fell all the way to +1.5 before tip off. I stayed away from it. The Bulls and the Dallas Mavericks so far this season betting were almost identical. That's why I went with some player props last night. Man, wish DeAndre Jordan would have hit those two free throws at the end. That would have helped a lot.
You never want to be in a situation where you need DeAndre Jordan to hit free throws. Whether you are his teammates or you are betting on his points total late in a game, never a good option for you.
So the rest of this Dallas Mavericks game, because it got interesting in the score 103-98 last night, I felt it was a closer game than maybe even that. And it got kind of out of hand in the last minute or so of the fourth quarter. The Bulls were down, I think, as much as 8 or 7. And then they climbed all the way back. And they had some key turnovers and some forced shots at the end from not only Parker, but from LaVine on back-to-back possessions. Kind of brought them out of the game. I didn't like their shot selection at the end of the game. But the other thing I noted from this game, too, is Wendell Carter Jr. got in foul trouble pretty early again last night, but he did a good job in the second half. I don't think he picked up his foul in the second half at all. He had 3 fouls in the first, but he ended with a line of 7 points, 10 rebounds, an assist, a steal, 2 blocks, 1 mammoth block on rookie Luka Doncic, which was awesome.
God, that was awesome. So awesome.
So I was a little bit concerned when, you know, he has trouble with other guys that are maybe more veterans, and that's what basically all Wendell Carter Jr. has seen this season is veteran centers that at one point have been at the top of their game in the NBA. So I thought he did a decent job last night, but man, he is getting no help on the boards from anybody. I mean, Chandler Hutchinson was the second most in rebounds last night with 9. He had 6 in the first half. You know, Jabari finished with 6, Archie Diakno with 5, and Zach LaVine with 5. You never like to see your point guard that's under 6 feet getting 5 rebounds a game. That's when you know you're in some trouble.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to take a positive out of anything you just said, it's the fact that Chandler Hutchinson had another 9 rebounds off the bench tonight in just 18 minutes. We've seen some good and some bad from Hutch, whether it was his short stint in the starting lineup and now coming back to a bench role. He had a couple of drives last night that just drove me crazy because you like the kid's confidence, but there were, I think, at least 3, maybe 4 times where he drove left starting from the top of the key. And he showcased his speed. The kid can actually blow by guys, but then his finishing is so bad, so bad. Like he tried to lay up a layup, and it went way high off the glass. It didn't even get the rebound coming back off the glass. Didn't even get the rim coming back off the glass. If you want to put the ball on the floor and drive like that, your finishes have to be better. So Chandler Hutchinson's offensive game still needs work. That. Not to mention the shooting form that he's still reworking. He did manage to hit his only 3-point attempt of the night last night, which you like to see, but he had all the time in the world to shoot that, and he needed all the time in the world to shoot that. But the rebounds are always there. The Bulls talked about how that was this kid's greatest strength coming into this draft class, a great rebounder for a wing who can get the ball and push the pace in transition. And we're continuing to see that from Chandler Hutchinson. So you hope while we wait for the other parts of his game to develop, even as a 4-year college player, I mean, yes, it's not great that Wendell is being asked to do a lot of the rebounding by himself, but if there's a second fiddle in that category right now, it's Hutchinson, and he deserves some praise for that.
100% agree. You brought up both points of emphasis of why the Bulls drafted Hutchinson. And I think he's done a pretty good job at both of those, right? The defensive rebound, he was one of the best in college last year. He had 8 last night, and I think anytime he's been in the game, he's grabbed a bunch of defensive rebounds. So I'd like to see that. And same thing with pushing the pace. I think finishing is going to come. He's going to have to continue to learn. You know, you had mentioned multiple times over the past month or so that Fred Hoiberg's trying to work on his shot, and I think that'll come, too, with being able to finish around the rack, just getting used to things. But I did see some really good things. The one about where Ryan Arcidiacono runs to the middle of the lane, Hutch kind of does a fake to the left and cuts back to the basket and nearly posterizes. I mean, absolutely posterized. I think it was Dwight Powell or Maxi Kleber, and either one of those guys, had Hutch finished that, man, that would have been an unbelievable poster to see. But the kid can get up, and he's athletic as hell. So I like some things that I saw from Hutchison last night, and I think he does have to get better at being able to finish around the rim if he's truly going to dominate it as a guy that can push it in transition and actually be a reliable scorer. But he did finish one with his left hand. Wendell Carter Jr. got a steal and pushed it up with Chandler Hutchison, and Chandler went coast to coast with his left hand and I think did a pretty good job there. But I think more consistent around the rim is what we're asking for.
Yeah, you know, and that'll hopefully come with time and more playing time and getting a feel for his game. And, you know, still, it's like, you know, he only played 18 minutes last night. Fred played his starters pretty heavy. Holiday had 36. You know, classic Fred playing Holiday, big, heavy minutes. Arcidiacono, 35. Levine, 41. Jabari, 30. What about this? This is something that we addressed on Bulls Outsiders last night, Jordan. Wendell Carter, 27 minutes last night. You mentioned another night with some foul trouble early, but then managed to stay out, just finished with only 3 fouls on the night. Are you wondering why Wendell's not getting more minutes in these games?
It's a good question. I think,
especially considering the other options of Robin Lopez and Felicio at that spot right now.
Could it be that, I know he's been in the game late, unless he's been in foul trouble, which has been 2 or 3 games, I think, this season where we haven't seen him in a closing out lineup. I'm curious, too, and I think that comes down to Fred basically having to sit him for the last, I don't know, what was it, 6 or 7 minutes of the second quarter because he had picked up 3 fouls. That's going to hurt him. And, you know, you see Wendell Carter Jr. pick up quick fouls in the first minute, 2 minutes of the game. If he can eliminate doing that, I think you can see the minutes start to go up. But realistically, man, Carter should be playing more, right? Felicio got 3 minutes last night, but Robin Lopez got 18. And I don't know if that changes a little bit once Portis and Markkanen come back, if you'll see Carter's minutes hang around 27 or 28 minutes. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised, but you know, he's got to score the bucket to be on the floor. And you know, I know looking at Robin Lopez being on the floor, well, he can't score at all. But still, you got to have a scoring option out there. And if Wendell Carter's not shooting great on nights, then it's hard to keep him in the lineup. But he's your only reliable rebounder. So it can go both ways.
Yeah, no. It's not like the primary thing that Fred's asking of him is to score points. It's nice when he has nights where he showcases some growing offensive versatility. But to your point, it's not like Robin Lopez or Felicio gives Fred any better options offensively.
Right.
I guess you're suggesting it's just when they go small, and you know he has a lineup out there with essentially no center in it. But like we haven't really even seen Fred use a small ball lineup like that. It seems like almost entirely through the first 15 games of the season, one of Wendell, Robin, or Felicio has been on the floor. And certainly, you know, that wasn't the case for the first handful of games before Bobby got hurt. We saw some small lineups with Bobby playing the five. But since then, I mean, yes, foul trouble is a thing. But Wendell finished last night with 27 minutes and 3 fouls. Jabari Parker played 30 minutes and fouled out. So, like, I'm sorry, like, what is he saving Wendell's fouls for, like their rollover minutes from back in the day? Like, what is the point? If your rookie center fouls out in a meaningless game in October or November, then he fouls out.
Let's also remember, too, he's a rookie. Like, they want to, I think the way to look at it is, don't press him with a bunch of minutes right away. You don't want him to get hurt. That's the very, very last thing that you need, is your stud rookie getting hurt because you're playing him 2 minutes, too many minutes. And which is fine. Like, man, if Carter's only going to play 26, 27 minutes until Markkanen and your core guys return, then I'm fine with that. If you want to ease him along and he doesn't hit a rookie wall when it comes January or February because you're pressing the gas in games that you didn't have any business being in or you don't necessarily want to win, then I'm all right with it. But yeah, it kind of doesn't make any sense when you think about it though. Like Parker, Carter, Felicio, Lopez. Carter and Parker should be out on the floor for the majority of the minutes, at least until you get your two other power forwards back. But yeah, I was a little bit confused by it, but I also wanted to run a lineup by you really quick. I thought one of the best lineups last night that I think the Bulls threw out there, and I don't know if the analytics back up, but the eye test certainly showed that I thought the Bulls were running good when they had Archie Diakno, Levine, Holiday, Hutchison, and Carter out on the floor. Going a little bit smaller, going super athletic, and I thought the Bulls had a good bounce when they had that lineup out there, and maybe that's just a simple case of not having Parker in the game, but yeah, I liked what I saw from that smaller, letting Hutchison or Holiday kind of play the three and four and go back and forth with each other. I thought that lineup was pretty good, and I'd like to see that again maybe tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really like that five as well. You know why? Because it doesn't have Jabari in it, and it doesn't have Blakeney in there chucking up bad shots. It's like
it's true.
Pretty simple. No Felicio, no Lopez. Take the worst. No campaign. There's a reason why that looks like one of the Bulls' better options of five players to have out on the floor. You're very talented center rookie. You're rough around the edges, but has showed some promise wing rookie. And a guy who can shoot in Holiday, your star offensive player in Zach LaVine, and a point guard in Archie who isn't going to wow you on most nights, but he takes care of the ball. That's why that five looks good.
The last thing I want to say is Jabari Parker played some defense in the first quarter. You know, we got some tweets about, hey, look at Jabari Parker's playing some defense. Yeah, he plays defense in the first 6 minutes of the first quarter and the last 6 minutes in the fourth quarter. Like, we've grown to kind of expect that. He had some nice defensive sets. You know, I will give him that. And we've got, I don't know where you have to, we're setting the bar basically at rock bottom, right? If the bar is at rock bottom for Parker's defensive ability, you can only go up from there. So I got to give him a little bit of credit. But, you know, again, last night he was caught looking, caught standing around, caught being lazy, frankly, just on the floor. Like, I watched one play where I think it was Dennis Smith Jr. or Harrison Barnes was driving to the left to the basket, and instead of going with that player to the basket, Jabari just kind of reaches in and just stands there. You know, those plays are killer, and I'm sure Fred sees it on film, and he'll go back and probably grill Parker for it in practice and say, like, look at the film. Like, you're showing steps here, but then all of a sudden, then you wipe all of that away by not giving any efforts in plays that end up turning into easy buckets. So,
well, and the one you just mentioned, not only does Fred notice that when going back and watching game tape, he noticed that one immediately, and immediately after that play, the next time out, he took out Jabari and put Chandler Hutchison in.
Like, that's true.
When Jabari gets caught not trying, Fred has started to punish him for that immediately, which I like. There's a lot of issues I have with what Fred's been doing on the floor this season, but the one thing that I can respect about what he's doing is if a guy is caught not giving effort on defense, he gets yanked. That is a good thing.
Fred's showing some signs of, you know, if he's going to be out after this season, he's going to go out fighting. You know, and you've seen that early on already with the... With frankly the depleted roster that the Bulls have, so it's nice to see that from Fred too. A couple other things I want to get to on the show before we do that, though. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. At Locked On Bulls on Twitter and on Instagram, at Jordan C. Bally and at Bulls_Peck on Twitter. Be back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Drop your voicemails, text messages. Doing mailbag tomorrow, so get your fresh voicemails, your fresh text messages in, your tweets as well at Locked On Bulls. And 331-979-1369, the place to do that. All right, Matt, just to kind of clean up the week, I've got a couple other things just to wrap up the episode for you. And one is... last night, there was a comment made by Zach LaVine, and I've mentioned it probably half a dozen times already on our episodes over the past month or so. And he cites lack of energy, and immediately I'm pissed off. Like, we've said this multiple times now, and I thought we were kind of over that hump after Golden State's loss, that embarrassing loss at home. And while we've credited them for playing better defense, hearing lack of energy when you're playing two teams, frankly, this weekend where you should have blown out the Cavs at home, that Cavs team is awful. And then, frankly, bringing in a Dallas team that's not very good, I don't think they're a world beater at all. The Bulls played them within two possessions on their home floor just a few weeks ago. So hearing this, not only from Fred Hoiberg, but from Zach LaVine and maybe a few other players, probably about six or seven times post-game, especially when the Bulls lose, this is becoming a bad theme. And I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer or anything, but I want to know why this team isn't coming into every single game with high effort and high energy and high intensity. Like, as a young team, that should be the bare minimum, right?
And some of it's on them getting themselves ready to play, and some of it's on Fred helping his young team get ready to play and coming out with an adequate, proper amount of energy. And, you know, let me just say this. As a fan, and by the way, as a quick aside, if you haven't yet seen the column that came out of The Ringer first thing this morning from one of their contributors, Jake Malooly, about the oral history of the Alan Parsons Project Sirius Bulls starting lineup, it seriously starts with the lineups at Old Chicago Stadium before this one, all the way through to the rebuilding years in the post-Jordan era, but everything about that Alan Parsons Project intro at the start of every Bulls game. And there are awesome sound bites in there from people who experienced it firsthand, like Jordan and Scotty and Rodman, Will Perdue, Steve Kerr, Scott Williams, all these guys, and also the people who helped build it in the Bulls, media and entertainment team. It is one of the greatest pieces The Ringer has ever done. I highly recommend it. But to that end, I read that this morning and I thought, here are players who were a part of that Bulls dynasty talking about how that intro got them so jacked up and filled with adrenaline and ready to play every night. On the road, it's different. But in a game like last night, when the Bulls are at home and they have that amazing intro, it's culturally one of the most famous things about sports and sports entertainment. It is, you know, some people will refer to it, younger NBA players like Draymond calls it the Jordan song. It is such a beautiful piece of sports entertainment history, and it belongs to us. And it belongs to every Bulls player that puts on that jersey and comes out onto the United Center floor for those home games. And I'm sorry, if people who built this franchise into what it is, a six-time NBA championship-winning franchise, talk about what that intro does for them to get them ready to play a game, how the hell does it not work for these kids knowing that they are playing on a historic basketball court? Get your head in the game. Let that adrenaline pump you up. Let that intro remind you who you're playing for. Get out there and give it everything you got.
I'm excited to read more about that article, though.
Dude, it's amazing. It's a long read because it starts with, you know, the Bulls before they got MJ and being one of the first teams in the NBA to try and do a higher entertainment value with their starting lineups. But it's like Ray Clay, the announcer who took over for that, you know, it was like 90 to 2002 was his stretch during the Jordan years, and the Bulls PA guy before and after that, Tommy Edwards. I mean, they're just amazing sound bites from all of these people who have witnessed that becoming an iconic part of not just Bulls history, but sports entertainment.
I do agree, though. I think what the Chicago Bulls represent, I think in modern day over the recent history, hasn't been all that great. You know, post-Rose era, post-Tom Thibodeau being here, the Bulls bench mob, post all of that, the last three or four years, it's gotten a little bit different feeling. It's gotten away from, you know, championships and playoffs and success. And well, we're only 2 years into a rebuild. I do agree, though, like the stature of playing for the Chicago Bulls should mean something. And I don't know how that they're going to pump themselves up for a game if it does, you know, if the Alan Parsons Project intro doesn't do it for them, find another way. before you get out onto that floor to have energy and come with, I don't care if it's having to go through Twitter and search your name and look at all the comments that are horrible to you to motivate yourself. And the only person that I've seen with true motivation this year is Zach LaVine. You know, I want to go back to a comment he made over the summer, you know, talking about people making fun of him, people making fun of the Bulls for basically giving him all this money and he hasn't really earned it. And he said, I'm a My Heart critic. LaVine said Sunday night during the Bulls summer league game, there's nothing that any of you guys can say to me that I don't take hard upon myself. I go back and critique my game every year. I'm used to people sleeping on me, and I'm used to waking them up as well. I'm happy that I have this contract, and I'm happy that I have a little extra motivation to go out there and prove it to some people that don't believe in me. At the end of the day, I believe in myself. I believe in my work, and I'm going to show the city of Chicago it's a good choice, and I'm here to stay. I'm going to be their guy, and I'm ready to do whatever helps the team get back to that spot. He's the only one that I've heard come out and say he's got something to prove. And maybe that's part of the lack of energy, lack of efforts. Maybe they feel like because they don't have any of their rotation players back, they don't need to give that energy. But I would say that's BS. Because you're young guys, you're trying to make to crack the rotation for some of those guys. You know, you may be plugged at the end of the bench once some of these starters come back. So I don't know what it is, but they need to figure it out, because I can't continue to listen to this all season long of every time you get blown out or you lose in bad fashion that it's lack of energy, lack of effort. That shouldn't even be a conversation with a young team.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's something positive to take away from that, it is that LaVine seems to be the guy who's trying to set the tone and trying to be, you know, playing 41 minutes last night and exhausted in an early November game, saying, hey, like, we need to do better setting the tone from an energy standpoint and a preparedness standpoint. Because you and I had many conversations over the summer, Jordan, about whether or not Zach LaVine could be that guy for this team. You know, as much as we all loved Lowry's rookie season, he doesn't seem vocal enough to be the leader of this team. Chris Dunn, the point guard, the floor general, the anchor of the defense, is he going to be the guy, the face of the franchise, setting the tone? Well, the latest Dunn injury, and Dunn's not on the floor, and clearly LaVine has been the guy to step up. He's the guy who has the contract that says he should be the leader of this team, and it's good to see that he is doing everything he can to lead this team.
Bobby's another guy that I think sets the tone, and not even just defensively. Like, even early on, guys have credited him in preseason for being vocal on the floor and pumping guys up and, you know, motivating them. So I think Bobby Portis is another guy that they're missing. And while he is on the bench, him, Chris Dunn, and Lowry Marketing, it's just not the same, though, when you're not battling it out there. You're not out there constantly with those guys. So once those guys return, you know, this shouldn't even be a conversation anymore. But another thing on Zach LaVine really quick before we get out of here, man. Zach LaVine is currently averaging 27 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists at 23 years old. Here are all the NBA players to accomplish this at his age or younger. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Tracy McGrady, Oscar Robertson, and Jerry West.
It's an impressive list, man. It really is. You know, it lets you know, with all of the things that are being asked of LaVine right now, and as frustrated as he might be on some nights, 7 turnovers, getting double teamed, not having a whole lot of help right now until some of these guys get back, he's still putting up some pretty darn good numbers. And I think that he's like 4th in the league in scoring right now, in addition to that impressive stat you just listed. So, you know, the silver lining, Bulls are 4-10 and have a brutal stretch of games ahead of them on the schedule, but LaVine is ever more looking like a guy who was worthy of that contract they signed him to.
I think he's got a major case, continues to play this way, and even if his points per game dip a little bit once the other starters return, I think he's got a really, really good case for most improved player this year. And I think, barring any type of health concern, he's probably going to be an all-star this year, which is awesome to see for a guy returning off an ACL injury. Like, yeah, this is everything we could have asked of Zach LaVine, and he's proving it to us. You know, he backed up his comments after he signed the deal this summer. He's really the only one that's been backing up his comments with, I'm going to come in here, play hard every day, and I'm going to prove to Bulls fans that I'm here.
Hey, that's not true. Jabari's backed up his comments about nobody getting paid to play defense. I mean,
oh, touche.
He backs it up in a different way, but he backs it up.
It's touche. Last thing I got for you, just to cap off Levine. You know, it's been lonely times here on Levine Island for a while, but I mentioned this a few weeks ago, and now it's even more prevalent than ever. Levine Island has become the number one tourist attraction for NBA Twitter so far this season. So you can hop on board. There's not going to be much space left in the next handful of weeks. So if you want to cruise over to Levine Island and hang out, you know, I suggest Bulls fans and NBA fans out there jump on board, because there won't be much room left. And then I'll have to call you out for all. You know, I'm thinking about all the people that were tweeting out, getting all their jokes out after the Bulls matched the Kings offer for Levine over the summer. You know, I just had to laugh to myself a little bit, because I'm like, imagine how many people are going back through their Twitter feed, deleting their bad Levine takes. And, you know, they're out there in hundreds. And I'm not just talking about fans. I'm talking about media members too, who laughed, scoffed. People here, even in the city of Chicago, said he wasn't worth that money. So it's good to see Levine backing that up.
Well, one of them being Nick Friedell, you know, our pal who's been on the pod a couple of times, who I think he was on Lowe's pod, the Low Post, a couple of weeks ago, after, you know, Levine's most recent 30-point onslaught, and him say, yeah, there was that whole thing where Levine quote tweeted Friedell saying, you know, there's no way Levine's worth that money, with laughing. And
did his fiance, you know, go after Nick Friedell after he signed the contract too?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. But, you know, and Friedell laughed it off and said, hey, man, you know, I'll take a little bit of credit for lighting a fire under Levine. But, I mean, to your credit, Jordan, you and I were both in favor of the Bulls matching that Kings offer this summer when we broke it down. But, to be fair, I was certainly more hesitant, a little bit more skeptical of him living up to that contract, and just saying, look, this is a matter of the Bulls, you know, they didn't really, they couldn't let him walk. It was a little bit more money than I would have wanted, and I wasn't sure what Levine would look like. You were certainly more confident than I was in that respect when it came to Levine having a big comeback year. So let's hope you being right continues.
I hope so, too. And, you know, it can only look good around the NBA when you see Levine at the top of statistical category leaders for shooting and scoring, usage. That's all great. And, you know, at the very least, it should put some eyeballs nationally on the Bulls. And especially, you know, we always have to preface everything that we say with the return of marketing and Dunn and Portis. But I think more so than anything, like, this Bulls team might surprise some people when they come back, and more so showcase Levine's skills, and maybe people will be intrigued at least a little bit about Chicago. So, gotta have some hope, crossing my fingers on that. But yeah, Levine Island, you know, book your tickets, because it's going to get awfully crowded over the next handful of months or so, and there might not be room left on the boat. So I know Bulls fans are on board, but NBA fans out there in general are starting to pay attention a little bit.
A little bit.
That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Follow us on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.